We are joined by our guest, Cal Skinner, and let me just give a brief introduction for him. He is the Libertarian Party candidate for Illinois governor, as I said. At some future time, someone from a political party other than the Republicans and the Democrats will occupy the governor's mansion in Springfield, and our guest, Cal Skinner, would like it to be him. He is the Libertarian Party candidate for Illinois governor, and he began his political career at age 23 as the youngest county treasurer ever elected in McHenry County. He has a degree in economics from Oberlin College and did graduate work in public administration at the University of Michigan. In the 1970s, Mr. Skinner served four consecutive terms in the Illinois House of Representatives, ran unsuccessfully for Congress in 1980 and Illinois State Comptroller in 1982, and then he was reelected to the Illinois House in 1992, again serving four consecutive terms. It'd be fair to say that he has long been an advocate of lower taxes, a topic I'm sure we will talk about during this hour. He has also taken a stand in favor of gun ownership rights, a higher speed limit on the state's highways, converting Illinois' tollways to freeways, and against higher cigarette taxes. We'll talk about these and other issues with Cal Skinner during this hour. We'd also like to invite you, as an Illinois constituent and voter, to raise your own issues with the candidate, as we always do on these campaign interviews. This is a chance for you to directly interact with people running for public office, and we think it's very important for this kind of public dialogue to occur so that you can make an informed choice when you vote on November 5th. To talk with our guest, all you have to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere in the state of Illinois. You can use that and we'll pay for the call, 800-222-9455. Those numbers match up with our call letters around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. I'm also going to give out an email address. It would be easier for you to send us a note. You can write to talk@will.uiuc.edu anytime during our conversation. And Cal Skinner joins us by telephone. Good morning, Mr. Skinner.
Hi there.
Thanks very much for being on the program.
Yeah.
My very brief introduction certainly didn't do justice to your entire career.
I actually earned a master's degree in public administration.
Okay, well, very good. I guess I wanted to start by asking you, what else would you like voters to know about you?
Well, let me tell you the idea that I got driving down to Champaign, actually. I'm driving down and I'm looking at the median strips and the shoulders. They look like golf courses. This is the prairie state. Why don't we plant them in prairie flowers? I mean, wouldn't you like to see the seas of yellow flowers throughout Illinois now? It could be a tourist attraction. And indeed, we could probably do with fewer lawnmowers. That is, people who drive lawnmowers.
Right. How so?
Well, if you have prairie grass, you don't mow it.
Oh. So, yeah, and I guess one of the points of your resume is that you have long been an advocate of environmentalism, that you are proud of your track record in terms of voting on environmental issues.
Well, back in 1959, when I was between my junior and senior year in high school, instead of going to Boys State, I went to Knox College to take a week-long course in ecology. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was 10 years before anybody knew what the word meant.
Right. And in terms of, well, you mentioned prairie grass, and there obviously is a lot of interest in this area in restoring a lot of the native prairie, which has been obviously decimated, I think is an appropriate word, in the development of the state. What other kinds of environmental issues would you like to pursue?
Well, I don't know how to give you a solution to this, but obviously one of the large environmental problems facing the state is the protection of groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
In the part of the state I'm from, much of our drinking water comes from shallow aquifers, mm-hmm. and we have to make sure these aren't polluted.
What do you see are the main issues causing such pollution? Obviously, there are a number of issues pertaining to agriculture and perhaps urban runoff and so forth.
Well, in our area, it's mainly gas stations.
Yeah. And how would you address that?
Well, I said I didn't have all the answers.
Okay.
I've identified the problem. I would welcome input on what ought to be done.
Okay. Well, we have a caller waiting to talk with us. Let's. The point of this is not for me to ask my questions
sure.
so much as the voters. So let's go to our toll-free line number four, a listener in Clifton. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, Cal Skinner.
Yes, sir.
I'm certainly glad that you're running. And it gives us a choice, and Let me say that I am sadly disappointed by the two candidates that have been put forward for us, the Democrat candidate and the Republican candidate. And I'm not going to vote for, cannot of good conscience vote for either one of them. And so I like your stance on in the environment. And, well, just let me say this. I got a telephone call here on Thursday before the primary, and the guy answered. He says, well, he was so-and-so with the Jim Ryan campaign. And I said, what's so great about Jim Ryan? He says, oh, he's a great American. And I said, well, if he's such a great American, how come he didn't do anything to investigate George Ryan and his selling of these driver's licenses? And he, whoever it was, hung up. And, of course, Blagojevich, he wants to have $500 for a gun permit and suggested that the veterans turn in our guns. And I'm a veteran, served in World War II. I'm proud of my country and proud of my service, but I'm aggravated by a bunch of stuff, and I can't vote for either one of these candidates. Another issue right now, there are 37 empty beds at Manteno Veterans Home. The beds are there and the facilities are there, but they say they don't have the money to get the staff there. So anyway, if you can address some of this, fine and dandy, but I think you do offer an alternative for the voters. I'd have been happy if I was supporting Pat O'Malley, and of course he didn't got knocked out. I would have been happy with Roland Burris. But no, the political hierarchy is one to decide. I did vote in the primary, but only 32% of the people in my county voted. It's time we start voting these primaries, too.
Which county are you from?
I'm from Iroquois.
Okay. I've been there, been to your local radio station, and let's see. I've been on your local radio station and been to your local newspaper. Let's talk about guns a little bit. I'm the only one that's proposing that there be a Personal Security Act, under which a law-abiding citizen would be able to take a short course in self-defensive use of a gun and then be able to get a permit to have a gun. Now, why am I doing this? The immediate reaction of most women, I'm sure, is they'll think I'm nuts. But there's a guy named Dr. John Lott that has studied crime statistics in all 3,000 United States counties.
He's also been on this program.
Well, he has done the best social science research I have ever read. He has, based on 20 states that have passed similar laws, one can predict that violent crime will go down over 2% and that rape will go down over 3%. Now, why would rape go down more? Well, basically, rapists are cowards. They're afraid to ask a woman out for a date in a bar, so they waylay them on the way home. Now, how much less likely would they be to waylay someone that they thought might have a gun in her purse? This is one of the issues that will never make the debates in the state of Illinois because the two power party candidates have frozen me out. I mean, they won't even let the League of Women Voters sponsor a debate. And the League had agreed that I could be in the debate if 5% of the people showed up in an independent poll saying they would vote for me. Well, guess what? That poll came out last week from the Southtown Economist, the daily newspaper in the South Suburbs. And, you know, on 9/10, when nobody would notice because of 9/11 coming up, Blagojevich and Ryan announced they were going to have four debates, and it would just be the two power party candidates. Isn't that special? So much for democracy.
Did the caller want to follow up at all?
We need to hear from more people than just these two candidates. So, anyway, I'll leave it for there, but I'm glad you're running, and it does give us an alternative.
Okay, thanks very much for the call. Other calls are welcome around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere you hear us around the state of Illinois, 800-222-9455. We have another caller waiting in Urbana, next on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. I just want to quickly respond to a statement the guest just made about rape. He said that rape is something that cowards do because they're afraid to ask women out on a date. That statement is so completely erroneous, so completely offensive to women who have been raped, that I just want to make that comment. Rape is an act of violence. It's committed for a variety of reasons, and rape is often committed by people who actually know the victim and who are actually already going out with the victim or are married to them. So I just wanted to make that statement because I just don't want to allow a statement like that to stand.
Well,
hang up.
You may actually know more about, I mean, you undoubtedly know more about rape of women. I certainly know more about rape of men. I'm the only legislator in the entire country that has taken on prison rape. So I'd be happy to be enlightened. I wish the caller had stayed on the line so that he could give me some references so I could better represent why rape would go down over 3% if a Personal Security Act was passed.
Yeah.
I know that CNN had stories from Louisiana when the serial rapist was active and the governor was holding press conferences urging women to go out and get trained in how to use a gun so that they could protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can't
reconcile that public announcement by a governor with what he just said.
Yeah, I have a feeling we could probably veer off into that topic, but let's instead continue taking questions from listeners, and we'll go next to someone on a cell phone on line number 2. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
Yeah, hi, thank you. It was mentioned that you favor an increased speed limit on highways. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, well, if you're such a champion of the environment, why would you advocate something that increases the demand for petroleum, increase the burning of fossil fuels, and ultimately exacerbate air pollution?
Well, just common sense, I guess. I've driven more miles in this gubernatorial campaign than probably both the other candidates combined. I mean, they've got airplanes. Blagojevich is using a racetrack owner's airplane, according to the day's Chicago Sun-Times. And I can tell you, as you obviously know, there are long distances between towns in downstate Illinois. The Census Bureau reports that people are having to drive longer in downstate Illinois to get to and from work in the year 2000 than they did in the year 1990. And it seems to me that people really don't want to spend time on the road. They want to spend time with their families. I can also tell you that the last time I drove 10 hours in downstate Illinois, I passed one person going 55 miles an hour. So it makes sense to me to raise the speed limit to 65 miles an hour.
Okay. Also, you know, on the same subject, it's my understanding that if a state does increase the speed limit on their highways, they lose federal highway funds. And to some states, that doesn't make a difference, such as Florida as an example, because they have such an influx of tourism dollars. So I thought I'd mention that also as another point.
Well, anyway, I'm not aware of that, but I can tell you back in the 1970s, I led the opposition to mandatory motorcycle helmet laws because Secretary of State Dixon and the Illinois Department of Transportation said the federal government would withdraw money if we did not pass a mandatory motorcycle helmet law. After I defeated the law, or defeated the proposal to pass a law, the Department of Transportation changed its lobbying tactics and went to the United States government and said, this is nonsense. You can't require us to have mandatory motorcycle helmet laws in Illinois. And they won. We didn't lose any federal aid.
Okay, well, thanks for taking my call.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call.
For calling.
Quick follow-up, and then we've got another couple callers I'll go right to. In terms of the speed limit issue, and you know, the caller's point about increasing gas consumption and fossil fuels obviously are something that are problematic for a variety of reasons. And your stand on environmental issues. I mean, how do you see those two issues being, how do you determine what's the best approach?
This is not 1973. I mean, I was or 1974 when Governor Walker, completely without any color of law, ordered the speed limits to be lowered. Cars are much more efficient now than they were in 1973. I live in Crystal Lake, which is probably 65 miles northwest of Gary. I last smelled the steel mills. Now, of course, they're shut now, but they were operating then. I last smelled them in about 1977 in Crystal Lake when the wind was blowing from the southeast. The air in Illinois is much cleaner than it was in the past.
that this is the other issue is, especially for Illinois voters, I think, the additives to fuel and your point about the pollution of the waterways. I know that MBTE as an additive has created a number of problems for a lot of people concerned about water quality. And I also know that a lot of people are very interested in ethanol as an alternative fuel additive. Do you have a particular stand on
those issues? I can tell you when I was running for Congress in 1980, I had two inventors from Elgin. I remember one of their names, Herb Hansen, and they changed the fuel system in my little Pinto so that it would burn 85% alcohol, ethanol, and 15% water. Now the problem with ethanol as a fuel is getting the last percentage of water out is really expensive. I do not understand why the Corn Growers Association hasn't followed up on this possibility. I mean, it was in the dead of winter. It was a really cold winter. The car stalled once. I mean, I think the Corn Growers Association ought to be having ethanol gas stations in the suburbs, and they ought to get some cars of commuters and put that shrink wrap advertising. Mm-hmm. Put it around them and have them driving on all the expressways in and out of Chicago every day, so that people can see that ethanol as fuel itself is an alternative.
Our lines are all full, so let's go on and talk some more callers. We'll go next to someone in Lovington on line number 4. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
I got a comment to make, I guess. I've been listening to you for a little bit, I think the difference I can see between you and a lot of people they have on is that you're actually saying something. A lot of people cannot vote for somebody that doesn't say something that they think that they've said that they want to hear, if you know what I mean.
Well, I haven't had a focus group on how I'm going to answer questions.
Right, right. Well, I just your answers are short, and I can actually understand them, even though I don't agree with all of them. I appreciate understanding what you think.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for the call. We'll go next to a listener in Effingham County on line number 1. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
Morning. I have something I would like to discuss concerning Illinois Veterans Commission. And as far as I'm concerned, they might as well do away with that. They really aren't helping very many people in the state. There's a heck of a lot of revenue that could be generated if these veterans was getting the disability that they're entitled to. And a lot of these claims are maybe 10 years old. And what I'm saying, I think that we need some state people to stand up for Illinois. And that's just one area where we're getting a short end of the revenue coming back to state. So we're getting too much going over there, and we're not getting enough back.
Well, my former legislative assistant, Pete Castile, who is Latino, I mean, I probably was the only Republican to have a Latino assistant in the entire General Assembly. Just got a job representing veterans. While he was my legislative assistant, I saw him get disability benefits for veterans who had been trying for 10 years, to get them and had failed. And Pete managed to figure out how to do it. So I can tell you I know something about, I'm not a veteran. I do, however, know something about prying money out of the Veterans Administration that the Veterans Administration doesn't want to do. And I don't know it personally, but I know my assistant knows how to do it. And let me tell you, we'll find people like that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call. There are several issues I want to make sure we talk about, among them taxes during this hour. But let's first, we have several callers waiting. I hate to make them wait. We'll go next to a listener in Champaign on line number 2. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
About the lack of affordable housing here in Illinois, particularly in the Chicago.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing the caller.
I'm sorry, I'm concerned about the lack of affordable housing here in Illinois, particularly in the Chicago area, and I'm wondering if you have any plans to try to encourage the construction of new affordable housing and to make that practical and of interest to developers to really concentrate on developing more affordable housing.
Well, I was listening to a call-in show on a suburban radio station today from Bartlett, Illinois, where the guy was complaining that the local municipality was allowing all this new housing when there was no money to pay for the schools. this is a double-edged sword that I do not know how to solve. I can tell you that the movement in the suburbs is to try to make growth pay its own way. And when you put developer impact fees in, it raises the price of the house, and therefore the housing becomes less affordable. We do have an affordable housing corporation in McHenry County, which is making, I think, fairly decent strides in helping people getting the houses. They are able to give a first-time homeowner $5,000 cash to help with the down payment. I don't know whether you have that in the Champaign area, and I don't know whether other parts of the metropolitan area have it, but I mean, it's a real problem. I do not have an answer.
Right. Would you support requiring developers as part of, say, large multi-unit housing developments to set aside a certain number of units if they want to take advantage of any government subsidies?
Well, like what government subsidies?
Tax credits that for acquiring the property or other things like that, subsidies in terms of infrastructure that's provided also?
Well, that's an interesting question, but I might support it in my local town, but I don't think I want the state to impose that.
Right.
I mean, libertarians are not real big on government mandating things, and I mean, even though I served as a Republican for 16 years in the General Assembly, I certainly am in that tradition. It seems to me it's a local option question, but, I mean, low-cost housing is such a huge problem that I don't think state government has the resources to approach it. I think the federal government really has to be the one that that steps up to the plate.
Okay, thank you for your answer this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. We're about at our midpoint here with Cal Skinner. He's the Libertarian Party candidate for Illinois governor. And your calls are welcome. All you have to do is call us at Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455.
I hope we can talk about term limits for legislative leaders sometime.
Okay. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, you raised it. Let's talk about it.
Well, we have three of four legislative leaders that have been in power in Springfield for an average of 20 years, Pete Phillip, Mike Madigan, and Lee Daniels. Now, Emil Jones has been there for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I'm proposing a constitutional amendment which would limit the number of years that someone could be leader of a legislative caucus to 6 years. My theory is that if you have policy goals, you ought to be able to make a real dent in them in 6 years. And if you stay around longer, you really probably don't have any policy goals. I mean, I would contend that none of the four legislative leaders have policy goals. They have power goals. I mean, both Lee and Mike, you know, they both wanted and were for a time chairman of their respective parties. This is not good for the body politic. I served in the General Assembly in the 1970s for 8 years, and during that time, the Illinois House was a representative democracy. During the 1990s, the 8 years I served, the Illinois House was like the Politburo. You got to clap. I mean, there was no reason for 173 legislators to even be in Springfield. I mean, you were just rubber stamps of the leadership. That's not healthy for the body politic.
Mm-hmm. What about term limits for members of the House and Senate as well?
The Illinois State Supreme Court has already ruled negatively on that in 1990. So, you know, that we can't do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't care. I don't care if Pate and Mike and Lee and Emil stay in their own districts forever.
Right.
It just seems to me that we ought to have a little rotation of leadership. It shouldn't just be Chicago and DuPage County that have the legislative leaders. I mean, there are plenty of qualified people all over the state that could do at least as good a job and probably wouldn't end up getting investigated by the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Well, perhaps we'll have time to follow up on that. Let me defer to another caller on line number four, someone on a cell phone. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning, Your Excellency. And you certainly will make a fine governor if the electorate, in its wisdom...
Now be careful there, because if you say Your Excellency, you really play on the natural arrogance that politicians have. And you don't want to... you got to keep them humble.
Well, the governor's His Excellency. And you will make a fine governor if the electorate, in its wisdom, should determine to make you our governor. But how could the electorate accomplish this seemingly difficult task?
Well, we obviously need help. We are, I mean, I've got an 800 number. It's 866-SHAKEUP.
As one radio interviewer said, you mean as opposed to shakedown? Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but it's 1-866-SHAKEUP. We have a website, which is skinnerforgovernor.org. The 4 is a number. It's skinnerforgovernor.org, and it's not completely updated, but it's got plenty of stuff on it, including all the press releases we've sent out in the campaign.
Your Excellency, it's reported that you advocate making our tollways freeways.
Yes, sir.
So tollways are much more well-maintained than freeways. Wouldn't it be better to build more tollways rather than to convert our tollways?
Well, you know, libertarians have given me some static on my proposal to free the tollways. But tollways make sense. I mean, user fees make sense if you make every street in the entire state a tollway. We haven't done that. The people that use the tollway have basically double taxation. They pay for the 274 miles of roads on the tollway through their tolls, but while they're driving on the tollway, they've obviously paid gasoline tax when they bought their fuel. And indeed, there's federal assistance that comes back from the federal government for every mile of interstate roads, whether it's a tollway or a freeway. I just think it's time to treat everybody in Illinois equally.
We're pleased to pay for those tollways to keep them in good shape.
Excuse me?
We're pleased to pay for those tollways to keep them in good shape.
Well, I'll tell you, there are lots of people that disagree with you.
Yes, there are. Thank you, Your Excellency.
All right.
I've never been called Your Excellency before. That's a real hoot.
Okay, well, we have lines are open if people would like to phone with their questions. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere.
I know how to get people to call. We can talk about cigarette smokers.
Oh, well, we can do that. I want to also make sure, though, we talk about taxes, because
sure.
This is a big part of your platform. And I guess I wanted to ask you, if you could write the legislation on taxes in Illinois to make changes, what would it include?
Well, first of all, you have to find a way to cut the state budget a lot. There is an institute called the Maricon Center at George Mason University that's headed up with a former member of parliament of the New Zealand government. And New Zealand has had the New Zealand parliament shrunk its government just amazingly, enough so that this guy, you know, can start an institute and tell people how to do it. When I was in remission from politics basically for 12 years, and after I ran for controller and Roland Burris won, I was in the bureaucracy as a management, sort of an in-house management consultant for a while, and I investigated all the state garages in the state of Illinois, all the ones that the Central Management Services Department have. And I tried to figure out how many hours of bookwork the mechanics did. Now, I had a high school classmate that was earning probably $50,000 a year when I was earning $17,000 a year, or $17,500 as a state representative in 1973. And he was earning that much because he could do many, many, many more than 8 hours of book work on a car. I mean, what that means is, you know, if it takes 2 hours to do a brake job according to the book, and you get it done in an hour, you get 2 hours of pay. Well, I couldn't find a garage, a state garage, where the average mechanic was doing 8 hours of book work. So this means they're not really highly motivated. It seems to me that it is, you know, this is ready-made for savings.
Yeah. Okay. And how? I understand what you're saying, that there is waste in state government. I believe that's the point you're making.
That's the point I'm making.
Yeah. And I guess shrinking state government, shrinking the budget, et cetera. I mean, there are a lot of issues that pertain to how we tax and pay the bills in terms of schools, whether it be based on a property tax, as it largely is right now, or as many people have suggested but not have had the political will to pursue, increasing the income tax to pay for education from the state level instead of property taxes from the local level. I mean, there are a variety of issues that pertain to how we're doing taxes.
Well, I certainly can directly talk to that.
Sure.
I'm not in favor of raising the income tax and making a swap with property taxes, because the local property tax districts will come in and fill the void. Actually, there was a big attempt to do this back in 1973 when the resource equalizer formula was passed. This is right after the Republicans passed the income tax, Governor Ogilvie's income tax in 1969, and by 1973 the money was really rolling in.
state aid education was increased an awful lot. Now, I don't know whether you have dual districts or unit districts in your listing area, but in my part of the world, there are a lot of dual districts, elementary, separate elementary and high school districts. They tax local property at a higher combined rate than do most unit districts. Mm-hmm. Well, in the legislation was the, I guess the best word I can use is the hope that they would, when they got all this extra money from the state, cut their property tax rate. They didn't do it. I don't think that there is a possibility that a swap will work. The one thing you can say about property taxes is it's painful, and that means that people pay attention to it. There's another, I think, advantage of the property tax, and that is that it's all spent locally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't like the people, the way the people are spending it, you got a chance to knock them out of office. you saw what the legislators on the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules just did. They changed the rule that said that new state employees had a 6-month probationary period mm-hmm. to a no month. I mean, you know, was it 1 month? Maybe they have no probationary period now. Now George Ryan proposed this, obviously, so he can stack the bureaucracy with his, with God knows his supporters. I guess there's some of them still out there. But the legislature had to sign off on it, and they didn't. So, you know, what's your guess? Were they bought off? How many jobs did each member of the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules get?
We have another call to talk with, and let's go to them. This is a listener in, where are they calling from? Champaign, line number one, excuse me.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning. I just wanted to thank WILL for getting this gentleman's viewpoint out. I've been an independent voter all my life, and I'm 60 years old, and probably leaning towards moderate conservative a little bit, but it's indeed refreshing to hear a gentleman who is honest, candid, and will answer questions. And I would be curious to know, and I'm very serious about considering to vote for Mr. Skinner. I'd never heard of you before, sir. But I would be very interested to know about your viewpoints on cigarette taxing in the state of Illinois, and also what we can do to get people of your philosophy into federal government. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Well, I'm the only one that was going around the state before the cigarette tax was passed, telling media outlets that there was no need for any tax increase, and there wasn't a need because revenues in state government, in the general revenue fund, which is what the cigarette tax ended up going for, were only down 2%. Now, I'd go around to local newspapers and I'd say, have you ever had to cut your budget by 2%? All of them said yes. Then I'd say, well, did you ever have to cut your budget by 5%? And a lot of them said yes. And one guy from a daily newspaper all of your listeners have heard of said, how about 7%? So I conclude from this that no businessman, no manager has any empathy with state government not being able to cut its budget by 2%. I mean, the medians in coming out of Springfield were just sold a bill of goods. And let me give you the comparison. The general fund is $24 billion, which is really too big a number to get your arms around. So let's say you were earning $24,000, and you knew that your revenue, that your take-home pay was going to go down $500. That's about 2%. And the question I would ask is, could you cope? You know how I'd cope? My 5-year-old son and I would go to McDonald's Playland last off. Instead of going to see Lilo and Stitch at the movie theater with Grandma and Mom and Dad, my son would have to wait to see it on video or on TV. Now, and what the folks down in Springfield did was say, hey, I'm earning $24,000 this year. I know my income's going to be down $500 next year, but I'm going to plan to spend $25,200. Nobody in the real world does that. I mean, this is just nonsense. I mean, the fact that the budget people in Springfield, and I served on the Appropriations Committee for at least 10 out of the 16 years I was there, and perhaps even more than that, they never look at last year's expenditures. They look at last year's budget. Well, that people don't do that. Businesses don't do that. Only government does that, and it makes no sense at all. And my first job was with the Budget Bureau in Washington. Back so far ago, it was called the Budget Bureau and not the Office of Management and Budget. I mean, it was during the Lyndon Johnson administration, and I hesitate to add it was a civil service job. I mean, I was the only one in the Budget Bureau would admit to being a Republican publicly. I should have stuck around. Maybe Nixon would have been elected, and I'd be the only Republican you could find in the Budget Bureau. But then again, maybe I'd still maybe I'd be in jail now.
Well, I think you're making your point clear, but you know there's also a lot of consternation on the part of school districts and you know universities who are facing not just you know the issue of not having more money the next year, but actually are cutting back, and you know most of the costs are tied up in salaries, and you know
well,
these are
you
working
know,
people who are faced with actually less money themselves as families and members of the community.
Well. Join the real world, I guess is what I would say. I mean, there are lots of people that have less take-home pay this year than last year. I mean, where is it said? I mean, you know, all the asthma workers, what did they get, a 3.5% raise this year?
Well, actually, a lot of people didn't get any raises here.
Well, no, I'm talking about the state employees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the union, the asthma contract had them have an increase in salary. While United Airlines was asking all of its non-union employees to take a 10% pay cut. George never asked the non-union employees in state government to take a 10% pay cut. I mean, does anybody really believe these folks that are earning $80,000 and up could earn that much on the outside in private enterprise?
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who are making, you know, $18,000, $20,000 trying to raise a family on that.
Well, they're the union well, there are not a lot of union employees of state government that earn $18,000. I mean, when I was there, and I remember in the mid-'80s, the secretaries were getting $24,000.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you know, I guess you know, I understand what you're saying, but a lot of teachers and you know people who are not in the state system per se, but you know the school districts, the people who.
Well, I can tell you, teachers in my part of the world are not poorly paid. I mean, I graduated from high school in 1960, and at least 5 years ago, one of my high school classmates who was a history teacher retired earning $70,000 a year. He was earning more than I was earning, and he wasn't working 12 hours, you know, 12 months a year.
Let's go to our next caller. This is a listener in Stell on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. Mr. Skinner, I wanted to so agree with your opening statement about not mowing the highways. I mean, I think it would be a very eye-opening exercise to calculate the amount of gasoline that we are going to send our young people to harm's way in the Middle East over just to keep those weeds down.
Well, it makes no sense at all.
Right. I mean, other states.
Do you remember far enough back?
Wildflowers, you know.
Do you remember far enough back that the state didn't have full-time people sitting in garages during the winter waiting for it to snow? That they had snowbirds. They'd hire farmers, and they'd say, "Hey, would you like to work for us to plow the roads when it snows?" Well, you know, my grandfather was a farmer. He played bridge during the winter. I'm sure if he had a part-time job, he would have been delighted.
Yeah, then maybe we wouldn't have to have more prisons to hire the farmers who are no longer able to make a living.
I didn't know our prisons were hiring farmers. You're broadening my education.
Yes, well, that's who runs prisons is local farmers. Another thing I wanted to mention was this is just an anecdote. South of Kankakee along Highway 57, the pruning crew, the crew that prunes trees, has just mutilated the trees that are along there. And, of course, that's all just for the mowers so they don't scratch themselves or something as they're mowing. But, I mean, it's just made everything look ugly. And then they come along last thing in the year and mow all these weeds and reeds and things like that and leave it this, it just looks like
well, they leave
trash.
Stubble. They leave stubble.
Yeah, and
I think we could turn our interstate highways into a tourist trap, basically. The state of Texas has planted native plants in the median strip and on the shoulders. I mean, I can just imagine somebody driving up 57 and seeing seas of yellow flowers, Coreopsis, I guess, would be in bloom this time of year, and other fall sunflowers and other prairie plants that have yellow flowers. I mean, it would just be stunning.
I hope that gets to the caller's question. We have about 5 minutes left with Cal Skinner. He's the Libertarian Party candidate for Illinois governor. And if you want to call real quick, we'll get you in. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222. 9455. We had an email question, and let me just read this from a listener who says, I am not familiar with the libertarian system on the spectrum between conservative and liberal. Where does a libertarian fall? What are the party objectives? And then also adds, what are your views on agriculture and how will you help Illinois farmers?
Well, I can go back and talk about one of the first bills I passed in 1973. It was the Agricultural Assessment Bill for the downstate 100 counties. I'm the one that passed that bill. My last year in office in the 1970s, the largest grain elevator bankruptcy occurred in western my part of rural DeKalb, not DeKalb, but rural Kane County. It was right on the DeKalb-Kane County line. And I conceived the idea of having a grain insurance fund that would be similar to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. I mean, town people put their money in the banks, farmers put their, what is their money, the equivalent of their money, their grain in grain elevators, and there was no protection. I did not get that bill passed. God bless Neil Hardigan. He figured out how to finance it, but I promoted it and conceived of the idea. And I mention that merely to suggest that when there is a problem in the farm community, even though I am, you know, two generations off the farm, I think I can come up with creative ideas to help solve the problem. Now, I haven't answered all the question. What was the rest of it?
The rest was basically a question about the libertarian point of view.
I am not a pure libertarian. I mean, they accepted me warts and all. In the beginning, they asked, you know, they wanted me to be, make this a campaign about drugs. I said, look, I'm not comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to make this a campaign about drugs. I mean, having said that, I should point out that I did vote for the medical use of marijuana for glaucoma back in 1978 or 79 when the only optometrist in the House, a Republican from DeKalb, marshaled the facts, and it made sense to me. Generally, I'm a politician that will follow facts where they take me, whether or not it is the popular place to go. If you're interested in the Libertarian Party, you could go to, let's see, the Illinois website is il.lp.org, I believe.
Sure.
Libertarians are not between the conservatives and the liberals. They take part of the liberal philosophy, and they take part of the conservative philosophy, and they really, I mean, they are, I believe, and I hope I've demonstrated, they are the party of ideas. I mean, I haven't heard an original idea out of Rod Blagojevich or Jim Ryan through this entire campaign. We haven't talked about cigarettes yet. We have to talk about cigarettes because, I mean, we talked about how there wasn't a need for a cigarette tax increase, but we didn't talk about how Jim Ryan raised the price of cigarettes $1.50 with a tobacco settlement suit, and how Rod Blagojevich spent over $300,000 telling cigarette smokers he was going to, and everybody else, that he was going to raise the price of cigarettes by 42 cents a pack if he got elected. And, of course, both their Republican and Democratic allies increased the price of cigarettes by 40 cents a pack this last session, and they didn't need to. I think that cigarette smokers are the hidden minority of this election. They're 26% of the vote, and the Republicans and Democrats have been kicking them around for the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, I don't know why any cigarette smoker would vote Republican or Democrat.
We have a caller that I'm going to try to squeeze in. We just have about 2 or 3 minutes left of someone on line number one in Champaign. Good morning. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just I had a quick question. I'll try to make it as brief as I can.
Okay.
You were talking about lowering taxes and how we didn't need to tax all this cigarette tax, and we were raising property tax, and you were talking about those issues. Well, my question is, why, if there's so much need in Illinois for all these new programs and subsidies and grants and so on, why can't we just move some of those tax revenues that we've already been receiving instead of lowering the taxes? Why can't we just move those into programs that we do need?
Well, of course we could. I mean, my atrocity of this season is $113,000 that the Department of Commerce gave to a Tennessee entrepreneur to build a $6 million water park on Wren Lake next to a state-subsidized failing hotel. I mean, it's the Field of Dreams approach to water parks. I'm sure everybody in Champaign would drive to Wren Lake to go to a water park. Now, if we've got that kind of, I mean, if we've got money to give to a guy in Tennessee, we don't have a budget crisis this year.
Okay. Well, I was just hoping that you would maybe touch base on some of the different programs we could take as far as like housing, school grants.
Well, I could certainly tell you how you can save $120 to $180 million right off the bat. You could instead of having each department that buys pharmaceutical drugs for its clients, have one contract with each pharmaceutical company. Now, Republicans will never do that because they get money from pharmaceutical companies. Democrats would do it, I believe, and certainly I would as a libertarian.
Right. So, my question is, what would you do with that money? Would you give it back to the taxpayers, or would you spend it on recreation and grants?
I really think that, I mean, welfare is down 74%, and so far the taxpayers haven't gotten a dime of a welfare reform dividend. I mean, it's time to share some of it with the taxpayers.
Hope that gets to the caller's question. We're here just about at the end of our time, and I just want to give you a chance if you'd like to give out your website address and
sure.
whatever other information people can get more
information. The 800 number is 866-SHAKE-UP. The website is skinnerforgovernor.org. The 4 is a 4. Log on and find out what Mike Royko said about me in 1977. I mean, I'm probably the only politician he's ever called honest. You'll be really interested. I mean, you'll be surprised at the context.
Well, we appreciate your time a great deal. We think it's very important to have these conversations with people running for public office. And so thanks very much for spending the time with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk to your audience.
Cal Skinner is the Libertarian Party candidate for Illinois governor.